accession number 20065, reel 1.
Janusz Kozieniewski, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Warsaw.
Which year was this?
1925.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
My father was an officer in the army, and my mother was just a housewife.
Did you go to school in Warsaw?
No, because my father I was born in Warsaw, and 1930 or 31, my father was transferred to COOP, which is army on the borders. And from then till the end of the war, I lived what is today Lithuania, small town Ignalino.
How old were you when you left school?
What do you mean, school? Which school?
How old were you when you finished your education?
Well, 1939, when the war broke out.
Do you remember the day that the war broke out?
1st of September, 1939.
Do you remember what happened to you on that day?
I do. I was excited and rather was looking forward that we shall win the war and Germans will be defeated.
Did anything particular happen to you on that day?
No, because we were too far from the front, so we never saw even a German aeroplane, nothing at all.
What happened to you during that month, September?
During this month, September, Russian invaded Poland from, if I remember right, from the east, and then my father, together with his battalion, was told to go to Vilno, and we went together there because we thought it's too dangerous to stay for us in this small town where my father was a commander, and we lived for a short during our stay in Vilno, Russian came, and we never saw our father again, really. And after a few months, we came back to the Ignalino because we had nowhere to live in Vilno. And in Vilno, when the Russian come, well, in Vilno, people didn't know what is happening, and everyone was rather hysterical. And gossips were spreading that already war is over. Then England started the war, France and everything, and Germany is almost defeated. And crowds were celebrating. Polish army was on the street, and suddenly there were gun explosions, because on the outskirts were already Russian. And in a moment, everything disappeared, in the army and the people. And the bullets started flying over Vilno, and in the morning in the night, I saw Russian troops already in Vilno.
What did they look like?
Well, first, when I seen them, I lived in the house on the third floor, and I crawled. I wasn't very sure what has happened, if they noticed me, so I crawled on the balcony, and from the balcony I looked down, and they were just walking in the streets with their rifle, and which I remember, they had a very long bayonet fixed on the top of the rifles. And the next morning, the next day, during the daytime, the Russian soldiers were already walking, and the tanks and arms and horses and everything was all over the place in Vilno.
Did they seem well equipped?
No, they didn't seem very, very well equipped. They were in the tatty clothing, the rifles very, very often had no straps, and they were tied on the street. The rifles were they had strings in terms of strings, you know, piece of ropes or something like that, or ebbing, you know, on their rifles, and they looked very poorly, really. And they also, I remember, that the tanks kept breaking down very often. They had to repair them.
How did they behave?
Well, as far as I was concerned, they behave all right, I think. I'm not very sure how they behave in general, but they haven't done anything, really. And a lot of local people, I suppose they were communists, and they were just put the red stars and they were running around the town and tried to help the Russian, and what they tried to help them, I'm also not very sure.
Were the people in Vilno Polish or Lithuanian or what?
No, majority of people in Vilno were, I think, they were Polish, but next to Polish were Jewish, I think. And also these Jewish people, a lot of them were also helping Russian. I mean, they were not doing shooting people, persecuting, but just trying to sort out. I don't know what they were really doing, but, you know, I know that they were putting red stars, you know, and trying. I wasn't very sure what nationality they were, you know, but Polish or Jewish, because not many Lithuanian.
What was the political opinion of you and your parents?
Well, tell you the truth, I was 14 at the time. I didn't have any political opinion at the time, really, you know. Well, probably had some, that communists are, it was not really opinion, it was kind of which was instilled in me by school and education, that the communists were really evils in a way, you know, and my father, who was during the First World War in the Russian army, and they were describing the murders and excesses which Russian did. So I was rather apprehensive, and I thought that we'll start doing the same in Poland, but they didn't really, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know, at that time.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, next we had to move from this house to another house, and we lived for about a month on a small street which was called Ostrobramska. Street Ostrobramska. And the end of the street was this very famous Madonna, miraculous, like Częstochowa, Madonna of Ostrobramska. So we lived there. And my mother was very frightened of us in case the Russian takes us away, so she wouldn't let us go anywhere. But she used to go herself out and trying to get some food. I don't know how did she did it. You know, probably she had some jewelry or something and she sold it, you know, and then we lived this way. But it was only for a month. And after a month, we decided to go back to this small town, which was 100 kilometers from 100 kilometers from Vilno, which is called Ignalino. They call it Ignalina today. There is atomic power station not far in this district of Ignalina. The only power station which Lithuanians have is in Ignalina.
And why did you decide to go to Ignalina?
Well, because there was our house. We left our house, furniture and everything, and my mother thought where we live there, so we knew the people. And we thought that probably it was my mother's decision. She probably thought that we've got more chances to survive there, I suppose. So she decided, and we went back to Ignalina. But in Ignalina, when we returned to Ignalina, the house in which we lived was occupied by Russian. And so someone, I think, gave us, there was a lot of empty houses there, So there was a house of Russian general from the First World War. And I remember he had only one leg, because one leg was blown off. And He ran away from Russia, and we lived in his house. And I think we lived free, really, not in a whole house, near his house, also not Lively's house, and we lived in this house. And then there, and when my mother, so there was few furniture, there was nothing there, but we lived there. But when my mother went to get some our property, which was in the house which is occupied by Russian, there was soldiers standing on the guard, and he said, my mother said, we want to take our properties back. I said, well, I can't do anything about it. Go to the commander and ask him for permission. And when my mother went to him, he said, go and take it. If it is yours, tell them that I told you that you can take it. And so my mother went back again and he said, no, I won't give it to you unless I've got a paper from this officer, from this commander. So he was just sending my mother there and back. In the end, she didn't get anything at all. I don't really know how exactly. Well, my mother still had something, you know. I don't know what she said. She used to go work there in here, and then I started working myself as well. It's not exactly. And after a few months, in this kind of existence, it was first winter, 1940. It was very, very hard winter, and the Russian already occupied there. So my mother was doing something. And we, with my brother, were also making a bit of a business with Russian soldiers. Like, they had nothing, so they were very keen to get anything which was glittering, which, like boxes from Swiss, metal boxes from Swiss, or something like that. So for these boxes, we used to go get these boxes here and there whenever we could, and then we'd go to the Russian soldiers, and they would give us tobacco for the boxes. And my mother, with this tobacco, would go to the country and get some food from the people in the country. And this is how we survived this winter. And in a way, at this time, I mean, to us, I speak as a, with mind and of the boy who was 14 at the time, 14, 15, well, 15 or 14 really. So probably, I'm sure grown-up people had a different opinion. But for me at the time, Russian, well, hadn't done anything wrong to us, really, you know. And even I used to go to the army, to the barracks and so on, and they would give us food, you know, from the whatever is left, you know, and they had, you know, so they would give us something to eat and other boys and girls as well. And they were very careless about everything what they had. So, for instance, I didn't have skis, but they had so... They took the skis from the Polish army barracks. There were stacks of them, hundreds of them. They had the skis also they owned because there were very deep snows. So I saw that some friends of mine, Polish boys, are pinching these skis from Russians. So I said, well, if they do, I will do as well. So I went to the car and took myself a pair of skis nobody noticed and got the skis for a whole winter and was skiing on this these skis. And then, I'm telling you, in a quick succession, what happened afterwards. Afterwards, Russian gave this part of Lithuania to Lithuania. I've forgotten when was it. I think it was 1941, and 40 probably something. And when they gave this part to Lithuania, and Lithuanian come, and Russian withdrew completely from this part of Poland. So we were then, well, we caught under Lithuanian occupation, and Lithuanian was saying that they came regain their own country, they are part of Lithuania again. And I worked with for Lithuanians. I was peeling. I earned quite a bit of money at the time. It was first spring, 1940, after the winter, which was very, very hard. Once we had minus 50 in the night. And when the first frost started in November, the first thaw, we had Easter. And then on this spring, I started working. I was peeling the bark of the trees in Lithuania, were paying me a bit of money, so I was putting in the kind of a giving to my mother and the way we were living. But after a while, in the summer, Lithuanian decided to populate this part of Poland with Lithuanians and remove Polish people, well, whenever they could. But they couldn't go, they only had a small Lithuania, so one way of doing it was sending Lithuanian people and taking cars to Lithuania. If nobody had to go anywhere, they had to go to the camp. But there was a lot of Polish Lithuania who lived before the war in Lithuania, and one of these Polish people took us and we lived in his estate.
Where was this?
In Lithuania itself proper. So where it's like in Lithuania, it was near Rosenje. It is near probably 100 kilometers from our house. So we had we didn't have anything in there. So we came there with kind of a personal luggage, really. And we lived in Lithuania under Lithuanian rule, under independent Lithuanian government. But this, of course, this is what I'm describing. This is really a history, which I don't exactly remember, but probably, you know, this must be written in a history. Probably you even remember more actual facts about it. But in Lithuania, 1940, I don't remember, probably it would be easy to find somewhere in some history book at the time, Russian. Initially, they gave this part of Poland, which was a long time ago, belonged to Lithuania, back to Lithuania, but few months afterwards, the army came and occupied whole Lithuania. So we found ourselves again under Russian occupation. And in Lithuania, the owner, it was about 200 hectares farm, and the owner was Polish man, but she was Lithuanian, because you see what happened. I know I'm deviating from my personal life, but you see what happened in Poland, that Poland had a union with Lithuania, with a Lithuanian king, and afterwards everything broke apart, and Russian occupied us as well as Lithuania, but because Polish culture was really higher than Lithuanians, so Lithuanians accepted Christianity from us, and a lot of upper classes of Lithuanians became Poles. They were Polonized. They became Poles, and they were Polish, but they called themselves Lithuanians, really, quite often. They spoke Polish, they sent their children to Polish schools, and so on and so on. So more or less, upper classes, which is not as upper as they are in England, but, you know, people who possess something, most of them were Polish in Lithuania, but they were really Polonized Polish. But in between the war, in Lithuania became rather very nationalistic, and they had not whole Lithuania, but some part, there was a party, nationalistic party, which was Kšaulis, and it was easy for them, when the Russians come, to set everything against Polish people, I mean this nationalistic party, because they had two arguments, that they were Polish, which occupied Lithuania, And secondly, they were upper classes, but in fact they were not. They were by blood. They were not really. Most of them were not really Polish. They were really Lithuanian. Like a Polish writer, poet Mickiewicz. He wrote in Polish, and he calls himself Lithuanian. And Polish people consider him that he's Polish, and Lithuanian say that he's Lithuanian. In any way, both of them are right.
So what happened to you? Because you were on this estate at Oshenie, you say?
Roshenie. Yes. Lithuanian call it... I can show it on the map later on where it
and
is.
And you said the Russians came back?
And the Russians came back, and they were... The man, the Polish man who owned the farm, he ran away somewhere, and we... In his house, we had a small room in the corner of the house. And we lived there during the Lithuanian time. And we used to do a little bit of work here and there and helping Sam, you know, looking after the cattle, whatever it is. And for this work, we had this free living. But it was before the Russian came. When the Russian came, he ran out of this place. And Russian came and they taught all these workers and peasants who were living there, his labor, that now they can get out of the houses and come and live. And because we also belong to upper classes, we have to get out of this house. You know, we had a small room in there. But this peasant, Lithuanian peasant, they were getting very old with them, very well with them. He says, no, we don't want them to go out. We go into this house, but we want this room to be left to them. So not it was exactly Russian. They were already Russian Lithuanian communists at the time. So they agreed to leave us in the house. So we stayed there, and we stayed there, and we continued living like that until invasion of Germany, 1941, when Germany invaded Lithuania, were there, and the army, they attacked, well, I saw the first time in my life then, not during the war when they invaded Poland, but in Lithuania, German aeroplanes. I even didn't know what aeroplane they are. I thought that probably they came from somewhere, I don't know, from Japan, because they had a strange markings and so on. And the first thing in the morning, I woke up, I saw this aeroplane. But next day in the morning, they were already German. And the German border was about 80 kilometers from us. So next day in the morning, there were already Germans there. And then when Germans came, we stayed there till 1941, more or less December.
What was the appearance of the German troops like as compared with the Russian troops?
Well, appearance of Germans, their troops, very, very, well, very much better equipped, much better dressed. They were kind of a cheerful and looked much more efficient than Russian did, because Russian troops looked kind of a bit of a rabble, you know, they were just walking. They would, when I refer back to these boxes which were selling to Russian, there was something, for instance, Russian roll call. I'm going back again to Ignalino. They said they were calling the army, and some officers were giving them instruction, and when they saw us, probably 100 meters, all of them broke from the ranks and ran to us, you know, whoever can get the first from us, this sweet box, you know, for his tobacco. So there was, I suppose it was kind of like a democracy in the army, but this democracy was really lack of organization, and nobody took any notice of anyone in a way. This which I had of the impression of the Russian army. But Germans were very efficient. But with the Russian, we had a bit more contact, because you see, Russian, on the other hand, although they're they didn't look as good as German did, but were more accessible to us, because we knew their language, and altogether they didn't keep themselves so aloof as German did from everybody. You know, it was easier to come and have a contact with them, with Russian or a soldier and so on. And in this way, they well, to me, they seem kind of a more emotionally nearer than Germans, although Germans were much better looking and more efficient. But they were just coming in the morning. When they came, there was a well, and they wanted to drink water from this well, so they asked my mother to have a first cup, I suppose, in case these are the probably it was poisoned. And also they helped themselves in the peach. They showed a peach in the peach stay, and they cooked themselves meal, you know, and they distributed among the soldiers without really paying anybody. And they left there also, they had quite a lot of horses, and they left their horses behind, and they were taking horses from the farms. And one of these horses was, well, it was wooden, but he, from his harness, or his saddle probably, he said that his back was bleeding, you know, he had a, I don't know how it's called, this kind of a wound, when he's rubbing, you know, and the flesh is exposed. So they left his horse in the farm, and I looked after this horse, you know, was feeding him and so on, and one day decided to have a ride on him, and that's when he recovered, when I got on his back, his prank with me. He jumped over the fence and ran so fast, and there was no bridle on him, no saddle, and I was frightened to jump off him. He was running too fast for me, and I didn't have any control over him, so I didn't know where he's going. And he ran on the footpath, and then there was a steep hill and a river on the bottom, and the hill was overgrown with pretty densely, quite a big fir tree, so I heard before that there were accidents when the horse ran with the rider in the forest, and then they was killed, because, you know, he runs near the tree and he can be caught, hit on the head, or next I decided, plucked my cow, I didn't really pluck, but it was quick, everything happened, I decided to jump off, and I jump off, and I knocked myself unconscious. And when I recovered, I couldn't get up really because I was so much in pain. But it took about a week or two before I was all right again. But afterwards, he taught me a lesson, and I never went for a ride on a horse again.
This was a German army horse?
A German army horse, yes. Because I never bothered to come back again and collect them. They took the horses from there, and I never. And then I saw also, first time, a man shot, because in the morning when they came, they came so fast that their army moved forward, and the Russian army was left behind, and they were just wandering, Russian soldiers, you know, not knowing what happened to them, where to go, what to do. And one soldier was standing on a little bridge there, and the German car was going with a machine gun, and he tried to run away, and he ran into the garden, I will call it our garden, it was not our, but we lived there, into our garden, and the German fired at him, and he, just at the moment, he was hit, just a moment, when he was jumping over the ditch, and he lied on the other side of the ditch. So everybody went there, and I went as well, and I saw first time in my life a soldier who was shot. And this Lithuanian peasants, they looked at him, and he had a kind of an army plaque on his breast, and on this plaque it indicated that he was from... Sorry, it indicated that he was from the other side of Ural Mountains, and he was not Russian, but he was some kind of a Mongol. But so they decided to bury him, and one of these peasants, who were very poor, before they buried him, he took.